Welcome back to the Eclipse Nation podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Merchant, and I'm joined by Blake Harris today as we preview the second round of the playoffs, Clippers versus Nuggets. Blake, how are you feeling about this series?
I don't know what to think. I mean, with how that series went against the Jazz, I don't know if I should be excited for Denver, if I should be worried about Denver. That series was just so back and forth. Both teams look so bad and so good. I have no clue. I mean, we saw a few games against Denver this season, how the Clips match up against them. There's a lot of people on Twitter that love the matchup. Me personally, I was pulling for the Jazz because I just thought that was a better matchup. But I guess the only way we can find out is to see what happens. So I'm just looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this 2006 playoff rematch.
Yes, I was hoping you would get to that because 2006, one of my very favorite Clipper teams, truly.
It's my favorite to this day still.
Was the one, I think my favorite team is actually Blake Griffin's rookie year, but I see where you're coming with 2006. That was really a team. But yeah, so 2006, this was when division winners were guaranteed a top three seed and the Clippers not so subtly tanked to get the Nuggets in the first round, which just, I loved that so much, just so they could avoid the Mavericks. Won a first round series for the first time in the LA era. We get the priceless moment of Reggie Evans sticking his hands in Chris Kaman's cookie jar.
Clipper legend Reggie Evans.
Clipper legend Chris Kaman too.
And Chris Kaman too. I have a Chris Kaman poster in my room still, the caveman.
Yeah, I'm going to say there are probably not a lot of Nuggets fans who are still upset about that series. Like, I think enough time has passed. Sam Cassell, still a member of the Clippers though.
Right. Now, I was going to say, I mean, it's not like the Nuggets lost in Game 7 heartbreak fashion where the Clippers were the better team. Mm-hmm. You know, they were the more dominant team that series. So, yeah, not a whole lot to be upset about for Nuggets fans. But, yeah, I mean, there's a fun trivia fact. You know, who was the Clippers' first playoff series victory against? The good old Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, I mean, certainly better than facing the Jazz, who I believe the Clippers are 0-3 against in franchise history. So, A little more positive memory
from that Joe Johnson game winner in game one, like 4 years ago.
All right. So let's bring it back to 2020. We've got a Nuggets team that just came off a 7-game series against the Utah Jazz. Jamal Murray was more than a little disappointed to find out that they only got one day of rest after said series until they have to play the Clippers. So let's dive into that first thing. Doc Rivers has said that it's kind of been hard for his team to find a rhythm the entire time they've been in the bubble because, you know, so many players were not present due to coronavirus. You've got Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams and Patrick Beverley having to leave for family matters and then coming back and having to quarantine. Everybody gets back in the bubble and then Pat gets hurt again. So they're finally, like, you know, starting to get things together. Then the league takes a 3-day strike. So the Clippers have played, I think, one game in the last 8 days. And they're going up against a Denver team that's been playing every other day, fighting for their lives. It's very much the classic rest versus rest conundrum here. And I think if Denver is going to have a chance in the series, you've got to take game one while you still have the momentum. Am I on the right track there?
I like that you mentioned the whole rest versus rest thing because everyone always talks about, like, who has the advantage. Does the team that just played two nights ago that's still kind of fresh have the advantage? Or, you know, the Clippers, like you said, they've played one game in the last 8 days. They haven't played since, like, Sunday. Who's got the edge? It'll be interesting to see, but that clip of Murray when he found out that they had to play in, like, two nights, that was gold. But, I mean, this is going to be such – For so many reasons. Again, the fact that the Nuggets, they've played so many more games so more recently, the Clippers, they are kind of rested. I'm sure we'll talk about Patrick Beverley in a bit, whether or not he's going to be healthy or not, what the status with him is in regards to tomorrow. But yeah, I mean, this is a matchup with two teams that have kind of had different experiences, but like you said perfectly, the Nuggets, especially, you know, after that 7-game slugfest, they need to come out with the win in game one. They need to go up 1-0 because just like that, all of a sudden, if they quickly go down, you know, 0-1, I'm sure they're still going to be gassed. They're going to be tired. And depending on how the game goes, it could be a game where they're in it the entire way, then a last second shot and, you know, their confidence is still high. But if they come out and they get blown up by the Clippers tomorrow, that's definitely going to put them in the hole early on. As again, after battling back, coming back down from 3-1, using so much energy in that series. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe as the series goes on, they'll be able to, you know, get their energy back, play a little better. But yeah, I mean, after that, you just based off Jamal Murray's response, I mean, these are professional athletes, and the fact that he seemed scared to play 48 hours later, it goes to show that series took a toll on them, and we'll see how they come out tomorrow.
Right, and I really don't think that the Nuggets are going to have a chance to ever get their win back, because this is an every other day situation for the rest of the series, like, unless the NBA somehow manages to get more days off in the middle, which I don't think anyone is counting on.
Yeah.
This is the pattern we're going with, like, for the rest of the playoffs. So, yeah, I think, you know, I always, like, you know, have that internal debate in my head over whether it's better to come in with a little more momentum rather than been sitting, you know, for a week. I feel like we talk about that in football all the time too, like, yeah, bye weeks versus, you know, coming into it. But I really do believe the Clippers have an advantage here, having had the time to, you know, get their bodies back in order and generally just having a deeper team, I think, than Denver. So let's get down in those specifics, because the Clippers and the Nuggets played each other three times this season. First time came in January in Denver. Paul George did not play in that game. The second time was in February in Staples Center, and Clippers absolutely crushed the Nuggets. I think one of their finest wins of the season. That was during that stretch where they had their whole roster healthy and they were just laying waste to opponents.
That was a fun 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's when they had that rout over Houston, you know, this massive win over Denver, which back when like the 2-3 seeding was like just starting to be talked about because we're heading down the home stretch of the season. And it was like, no, the Clippers are clearly in a class far above the Nuggets. And then they played once in the seeding games here in Orlando, which the Clippers won. I don't take too much away from that game because, you know, like we mentioned, the Clippers had so many of their own personnel issues to deal with coming into the bubble. Yeah. The Nuggets also have been hit by the coronavirus, like arguably more than any other team. I don't think Gary Harris played a game until game 6 of the postseason.
I think so, yeah.
Like, we talked about how strange it was to bring Montrezl Harrell back into like game action in game 1 of the playoffs. Their team is down 3-2 and this guy has to go in, and it's like, oh, guard Donovan Mitchell, please.
Right.
They've changed their starting lineup completely. I mean, Monte Morris is in there. Torrey Craig is in there. I thought I had a really good sense of who the Nuggets were coming into the bubble. And now I'm not entirely sure that I know what kind of team to expect. So let's just start at the top. We've got Nikola Jokic versus Ivica Zubac. This is a matchup I really like because Jokic, obviously one of the best setters in the league. Zubac, though, kind of loves playing against these big bruising guys, right? Like, I think this is a good matchup for him.
This was one of the things when I was trying to figure out who exactly, like, I wanted the Clippers to face. Jokic, he's the overall better player.
Of course.
But when you're comparing him to, like, Rudy Gobert, who the Clippers would have had to potentially go up against, I think, although Jokic, I mean, the way this dude doesn't look like he should be able to even play the game of basketball, let alone hit threes the way he does.
He's a higher lift than Steven Adams to play that.
I do think that this is going to be a better matchup than having to go against Gobert. And especially for Zubac. I mean, we've seen, it's kind of like his coming out series. Doc had some quote it was the other day where, I can't remember if it was after game 5 or game 6, where he said, like, Zubac is having, like, the playoff of his career. He's, like, coming out. I don't know what the exact quote was, but he was, like, praising him, and he's doing fantastic. This will be interesting to see because I know, you know, early in the year, Jokic, he's kind of played, you know, like, an MVP caliber, but there were spurts during that Utah series where he just didn't look good. Again, I don't know if it was just the bubbles getting to him, maybe the amount of games they were playing, but the one thing I will say is this is definitely, you know, beneficial towards the Clippers having to go against him instead of having to worry about Gobert, because Gobert is an absolute just good. If you're in the paint against him, good luck. I mean, it's not going to end well for you. At least with Jokic, it's, you have a better chance. And this is going to be an exciting matchup. I mean, I don't know how young Jokic is. I mean, I want to say like 25, 26 ish.
That sounds maybe about right. Yeah.
So two really young centers. And I think that's going to be a really fun battle between these two guys.
Yeah, what was interesting is, you know, Jokic has this really great post game, but the Jazz kind of took him out of the paint for that. I'm sorry, not the Jazz. The Nuggets decided to take him out of the paint because they wanted to keep Rudy Gobert out of the paint. So they just sort of made him a stretch five for the majority of that series. And
aside,
like,
from that final shot to essentially like nearly win the game in game 7, where it was just a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like Jokic is still a really good three-point shooter. You know, like, that's a shot that you don't mind him taking. And I'm sure that's something Denver will consider doing against the Clippers, because that's a way you can have more success against Zubac by taking him away from the basket. But yeah, that's a tough matchup for Zoo. And I'm really glad that Doc got practice playing him 30 minutes a game or so against the Mavericks, because
finally,
this is a series where you're going to have to match him up with Jokic's minutes, because Montrezl Harrell does not have the heft or the ability to defend in space against Jokic on the perimeter. Like, I'm not going to call it another Boban matchup, because Boban is just like another physical species,
right?
In the nicest way possible. I don't mean to just objectify like people down to their physical appearances, but I do think this is a series where I want Zoo on the court as often as Jokic is, and just match me Montrezl Harrell with Mason Plumlee, and that's a lineup I think – that's a matchup I think Trez is going to win perfectly fine. Like, Mason Plumlee is not strong enough to keep Trez from doing what he wants to do next to the basket.
Yeah, hopefully Doc learned from the whole Trez Boban fiasco, where when you get those people on Twitter that are giving you those, like, in-depth stats on just how lopsided it was – Hopefully Doc will learn from it, and we don't have to worry about that problem. Because like I said, I think bringing him against Plumlee, it's going to be a much better result than what the Boban experiment was round one.
Exactly. So we've got Denver's number one star, Nikola Jokic, and then we have their other star, Jamal Murray, who may have even taken number one status after the series that he had against Utah.
I think after that series, I'd say Denver star is Murray. I mean, when he signed that mega deal not too long ago, I remember going, what a waste. Like, I didn't think he was worthy of that max. He hasn't earned it just yet because you can't get it from one series, but he is close. I mean, I was impressed from him. I mean, his, like, scoring average just for the series was, like, 35-something points. He was remarkable. And he was actually the number one reason I was scared about Denver. It's just because, at least with, like, Utah, if you stop Mitchell, I don't know where they're going to be getting their points from. Maybe Joe Ingles goes off for 30. But Murray, I mean, the fact that he can give you 30 to 40 so easily, it seems like. But even if the Clippers can contain him, they're going to get the scoring from elsewhere. But I said Kawhi was the best player, like, overall in the first round in regards to the NBA playoffs. But Jamal Murray, I'd have him at number two. But I'd have him as, like, my most impressive, just because, I mean, I've seen games, you know, whenever the Clippers play or whenever games are on ESPN TNT, I'd be like, okay, this guy's pretty good. But having watched nearly, I think I watched 6 of the 7 Jazz Nuggets games, this guy is the real deal. Like, this guy is going to be a multi-all-star in the years to come if he can keep this up. And I was just really impressed with Murray. So me personally, who knows, we'll see what the matchups look like, but I'm expecting another huge series for Murray this round.
Yeah, what's interesting about Murray is he kind of succeeds in the shots that you're willing to concede for guards. Because, you know, Luka, he does the very traditional, I don't want to say traditional because he's a very unique player, but, like, he gets to the rim, you know, and then he, like, passes out from there or he finishes around your guys. And, like, that's the kind of real estate that you try to protect against everybody, right? Like, you're always trying to keep eyes away from the rim. But Murray, great mid-range shooter. He's shooting 50%+ from three-point range.
Yeah.
Like, you have to rejigger your defense to think about, like, what it is that he specifically does well. And, like, honestly, quick, small guards are kind of a bugaboo for the Clippers. I noticed that, like, Donovan Mitchell did really well against the Clippers this season. He's obviously a little bit bigger than Murray, but, like, not by much, I don't think. It's just the type of player, I think, that's an interesting, you know, matchup for the Clippers. Obviously, Patrick Beverley's health plays a large factor into this. Doc said that he's definitely going to play in the series, and he's pretty sure that he was going to play in game one. My instinct is that if he's still listed as questionable, you know, going into Thursday, that they probably won't start him. They'll probably keep Landry Shamet in the starting lineup and then move, you know, Pat off the bench, kind of like they did when he played the first game of the seeding games and came off the bench against the Lakers. I don't love that because then you're starting with George on Murray, right? Paul George on Murray, keeping Kawhi in help, which, I mean,
yeah, that was
great. You know, Paul George and guard Murray, it's fine. It's not like what I was talking to. But I just like that Beverley matchup on him, and I'm looking forward to seeing that as the series goes on.
I just hope they're smart with Beverley. Hearing what Doc said, to see that he was questionable, I was kind of taken. I thought he'd be probably listed as probable, if anything. So the
with
fact
that confidence,
he's
right? Yeah.
The fact that he's listed as questionable makes me think either he does miss game one, and that's the only game he misses, or, like you said, they'll keep him off or bring him off the bench, ease him in, maybe play him 15 to 20 minutes. I still think the Clippers, without Patrick Beverley, they can easily beat them. I mean, not easily, I mean, that's a strong word, but I think they can beat the Nuggets without Patrick Beverley. So I don't think, unless he's like 95% ready to go, I don't think it's worth rushing him back or playing him too many minutes. So if he comes out tomorrow and he's like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, I wouldn't be upset if the Clippers decided to just rest him for the entire game and then bring him back game two. Because again, I think they can get past the Nuggets, and if they're able to, you know, the most important series is that Western Conference Finals. So if he plays tomorrow, great. I just hope, again, that they're smart. I'm sure they will be. They'll be smart about it. But that's definitely going to be something to monitor, especially, you know, if he comes off the bench. That just shows that, okay, maybe he still isn't 100%. He needs to kind of ease his way back into it. Plus, as we've seen, having Shamet start the game isn't too awful of an idea.
Right. And I'm totally with you on the Pat thing because I agree they can beat the Nuggets without him. I don't think they can beat the Rockets or the Lakers without him. So that's something that you have to be keeping in the back of your mind, even if, you know, you don't like to look ahead. It's just health has to take precedent. Right. So let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about the rest of this. All right. So we ended by talking about Landry Shamet, who's been really great as a starter for the Clippers in the last four games. I'm a little worried about Shamet going back to the bench, actually, because I feel like he's at his best when the action flows through him to start the game. And I think it's harder for him to find his rhythm when he comes off the bench. Understandably, you'd want to start Patrick Beverley, especially in a series where there is a prime defensive matchup at point guard. But am I overthinking this? Like, is it, you know, is Shamet better with the starters? Like, what are you feeling here?
I mean, it is tough to tell because seeing how Shamet was when he was coming off the bench compared to when he start, it was two different players. I mean, he was fantastic. The first game he started, it was like we scored 19 points or something like that. Then the other few games didn't score as much, but he just looked overall more comfortable. He looked better. His confidence looked higher. It's an interesting thing you bring up, whether or not, you know, do you ride with that? Then do you bring Pat off the bench? I don't think it's awful because as we've seen, it doesn't really necessarily matter what you do. It matters with how you close things out in the fourth quarter. So if they want to start Shamet and then bring in Pat Bev with 5 minutes left, I really don't care because I think we can all assume, depending on how the game flows, Patrick Beverley is likely going to be out there when the game's in the final few minutes. So we'll worry about that then. So, I mean, if that's the best way, will Doc, you know, think that and go with that route? I'm not exactly sure. But, no, I like what you mentioned because, again, it was only a few game sample size, but Shamet, I mean, this is a guy where if you can get Shamet going, if you can get Shamet contributing as your fourth best, you know, option, maybe even your fifth best option, if you want to have, you know, Morris as your third, Lou Will as your fourth. So if you can get Shamet playing the way he did, you know, in that first game, he came off the game or started the game. I think it was game three. So if you can get that kind of Shamet again, as your fifth best option, I'll take that any day of the week. So I don't think it's an idea that's too far fetched.
Yeah, and I just get a little queasy thinking about, you know, those Reggie, Lou, Landry lineups. I mean, and that's...
They're coming.
I guess that's
you know,
more...
Doc wants them.
The funniest thing while we were watching this Oklahoma City-Houston game earlier was, like, during one of the interminable timeouts at the end, someone tweeted, like, it's just enough time for Doc Rivers to sub in Reggie Jackson.
And the worst part is he's going to sub in Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson's going to come in and take an awful three-point attempt, and it's going to go in. And we're all just going to forget that he's out there in the first place. Like, the amount of threes that Reggie's knocked down after an awful defensive possession is remarkable. Like,
the man keeps his head up. Got to keep playing.
Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like he's knocked down the most threes of any Clipper this playoff series. Again, maybe it just – I think he's knocked down more than I think, but I feel like he has to be leading the team because it seems like every game he's having, like, a stretch where he knocks down 3 to 4.
Yeah, well, it does, you know, bring us to a question about – well, let's actually get into the Clipper stars right here because, you know, there is literally no team in the NBA that has two capable wing defenders to guard Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And really what you're doing is you're hoping that you can slow one and then just pray that Paul George has a bad shooting night, which is kind of what Dallas was going for in their first few games. And that worked for a little while. It's not a terrible strategy. Kawhi is clearly the more consistent, productive player. And maybe you just say, like, well, let Kawhi do his thing and then just shut down George. Like, that might even be a more sustainable strategy. But
the
Nuggets have they've got Torrey Craig, who I don't think was starting. They've got Jeremy Grant, who I actually kind of like as a Kawhi defender. And then they have Paul Millsap, who is sort of still there in Denver after all this
time. He's like the most forgotten about Nuggets player, just like the most random, like, Paul Millsap, he's still in the NBA. He's still
kicking.
Good player.
But yeah, I think this is going to be another one of those series where, yeah, Reggie Jackson, the most threes in the first round.
Oh my gosh.
Reggie with 16, Marcus Morris with 14. Paul George with 14, Landry Shamet with 11, and Kawhi Leonard with 10.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why Reggie keeps playing. You know, he's a good shooter. But yeah, again, getting back to that, I don't think this is going to be one of those series where, like, Kawhi really has to work for his offense. I could be wrong. I think Jeremy Grant's, like, a capable defender, but I also think that having too many good defenders on the floor really compromises Denver's spacing because they just don't have two-way players, right? They've got guys like Michael Porter Jr. all offense. And they've got guys like Torrey Craig, who's like gacking a game-winning layup at the end of game 7, right?
So, yeah.
I look for Kawhi to just be continuing to be Kawhi, which, you know, feels like a very obvious thing to say. But I also think that this is the kind of series where Paul George can really get going again because Cary Harris, I guess, will be the guy that's on him, but he's significantly smaller than Paul George. Yeah. Just one of those matchups where he can just shoot over him. So I like this matchup a lot for the Clippers offensively, and I don't think that's going to be the side of the court where they have any struggles.
Kawhi is going to average 30 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists this series, and it's just going to be consistent. It's just, like, again, a matter of what happens with Paul George. And I think what we saw from him those last two games, I think, you know, knock on wood, that playoff P is arrived, and I think he's going to stay for good. Because what happened those that 3-game stretch, or even we said, it was like, this is – it has to break soon. Like, you can't go 4 consecutive games being this bad. And I think, you know, after that whole thing with, you know, his depression, his anxiety, him opening up about it, him, you know, having the confidence now. Because we talked about that, I think, after one of those losses or something where his confidence was just gone, where he was passing up shots, and then he comes out the next two games and he's literally shooting everything he possibly can. So I think Paul George is actually going to thrive in this series. Again, Leonard, he's going to give you his consistent stat line. But I think we're due for a big series from Paul George. I really do. I think he knows what's at store now. He knows that they have a chance to get to the Western Conference Finals for the first time. And for him, you know, he has a chance to shut up the haters, because for whatever reason, you see it across the league. James Harden has an awful night offensively. The other day was like Kyle Lowry has an awful night offensively. You don't hear any backlash. Come
on, James Harden gets the haters.
Yeah, but it's everything's on Paul George. So I think he wants to prove the doubters wrong. And I think he's going to come out, because it'll be interesting to see defensively what Denver does. Are they going to prioritize Kawhi or Paul George? Like, I mean, they could literally do whatever they want against Kawhi, and he's going to get his. So Paul George, he might actually benefit from this the most. And again, I called him having a huge – I predicted him being the MVP of the Dallas series. Didn't necessarily go that way, but I'm going to save that and maybe actually use it for this one, where Paul George is actually going to be the MVP for the Denver series.
Well, to be fair, I think we all said, like, obviously Kawhi is going to be the MVP, but just for some diversity.
Yeah, let's go with someone else.
I do think Paul George is probably pretty happy that Joe Ingles is not on the other side of this matchup, because he tends to annoy Paul George.
I'm sure Doc Rivers is happy he doesn't have to see Joe Ingles too.
Doc Rivers is just having a great time watching his son in the bubble, and Austin gets to stay around. So
it was Dante Cunningham, right, that Doc chose over it was something Cunningham. I just
thought it was Jared Cunningham.
Or maybe it was Jared Cunningham. I can't remember which Cunningham it was, but over Joe Ingles. Let it go, Doc.
Yeah, so the more I talk about it, I kind of feel like Denver's probably better served just putting their best guys on Paul George and letting Kawhi do what Kawhi does, because he's just, you know, metronomic with his efficiency. Like, there's no disrupting his rhythm. Like, the only thing that was working against Kawhi Leonard was the fact that he individually couldn't make three-pointers. That wasn't anything the defense was doing to him. That was just his jumper hasn't quite come around yet. And to think that Kawhi can get more efficient than what he was in the first round, like, this is a scary thought for the rest of the NBA. Like, he convincingly looks like the best player in the league right now to me. And I don't see what Denver is supposed to do to stop that. Like, they had a hard enough time with Donovan Mitchell, and I love Donovan Mitchell. He's not anywhere near the same class as Kawhi Leonard.
That stretch in game 6 when Dallas got it back to within like 6 points.
Right.
And Kawhi just, I don't know how many points in a row he's scored. 8. But he had the dunk, and then it was just like mid-range, and he pretty much put the Clippers, you know, back on top. But yeah, that stretch right there, that's what, you know, the best players, that's what MVP players do. They take over, they, you know, win the game. But again, he does it just so casually. So I'm not going to say it's like boring, but it's just, you watch it and you can just look away for a few seconds and miss it, because it's just, it's Kawhi. As I've said, he's just out there having fun. But like you said, I mean, it's so effortless, and it's remarkable. And again, I'll still say this, he's going to average his 37-5 this series, and you're not going to really realize it. Like, you're going to be more, you know, brought back by Paul George averaging 27 points or, you know, like Lou will averaging 18, then Kawhi just casually dropping 30 a night.
Right. So one little item that has been making the rounds in the news recently is that the Clippers had a chance to draft Michael Porter Jr. in the 2018 NBA draft. They elected not to. They picked Jerome Robinson, who was later shuttled to Washington as part of the Marcus Morris trade. I think it's safe to say that the Clippers did not exactly get optimum value out of that draft pick. But in their defense, the medical reports on Michael Porter Jr. were rough.
Yeah.
He did not play his entire rookie season. He did not play for much of this season. And he's basically still feeling his way out, you know, in the playoffs in the second round now against the LA Clippers. He's a player who is really interesting to me, because on the one hand, I don't think he can actually like do anything defensively against the Clippers. Nope. And I think they're going to just needlessly hunt him, and it could get fairly ugly. Like, if he comes in the bench units and Lou Williams is on the floor, he's just going to be running pick and roll with Porter's defender Porter's assignment every single play. Like, it could get bad for Porter. But on the other hand, he's a big dude. He's got real offensive talent. And if the Clippers run some of these junk three-guard lineups that they have been, he could maybe put some points on the Clippers. Am I wrong for thinking that?
I want to touch up on just that whole thing with the – because he, like, came out and said something about, like, the Clippers doctor was the one that had, like, that harsh diagnosis on him. But first off, it's a good thing that the Clippers pick with Shea turned out to be such a good one, because had they struck out on that, you know, you could have had two top 13 picks. Mm-hmm. Had they both been busts, who knows if the Clippers are at where they're at today, because Shea was such a huge piece, you know, in the Paul George trade. Mm-hmm. Entering that draft day, either there were two players I desperately wanted the Clippers to get. It was Shea and it was Porter. And I said, I think Shea's going to be a stud. If he's able to slip to us, he's going to be fine, you know, develop him and whatnot. Porter's going to miss all year. That's fine. Let him heal. I mean, you're getting two lottery picks. Like, that's great enough as it is. Right. Porter was like, I think Porter was the number one recruit out of high school.
Yeah, he was number one in his class, I believe.
Missouri,
yeah.
And, you know, he looked good. Those, like, three games he played in Missouri, then he was out for the rest of the year. And I was saying, like, I'm fine with the Clippers waiting a year. And draft day, there was a report that came out that Jerry West loved Jerome Robinson. And I said, oh, no. Like, I mean, I trust Jerry because he was getting, like, Klay Thompson comparisons, and Jerry took him. And Jerome Robinson was a bust, to say the least. Now Porter's looking good. I mean, he does have spurts where you could tell he's still a rookie, but the fact that he's kind of having his, like, coming out party this playoff series, where Porter, like, he could easily go for 30 any of these games for the Nuggets. He can easily do that. But like you said, defensively, I'm sure Kawhi and Paul George are going to have a field day with him, because I even remember, like, one knack of him coming out of college was he's awful defensively. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a certified bucket. He has a really nice stroke. Like, watching him shoot the ball, it's
so effortless.
Mm-hmm. That will be interesting to see. And a lot of people were trying to, like, create this narrative today that Porter has beef with the Clippers, when their doctor gave this diagnosis and they didn't choose me, but I don't care. So I hope that no one tries to make this a big deal, because it's not. But yeah, I mean, it's great seeing him develop, because it does suck what he's gone through the last few years with injuries. But knowing that the Clippers took Jerome Robinson over him, and it's not the fact that Porter went, like, pick 22, 23. It was, you know, a little while after. It was the very next pick. It was the very next pick after Jerome Robinson, who very well might be out of the NBA in 2 or 3 years. Who knows? Maybe he'll turn it around in Washington. But, yeah, it's going to be exciting to see, because I feel like for the Nuggets, I feel like Porter could be their X factor. Because, like I said, he can give them 20 to 30 points on any given night. But, you know, there were some games against the Jazz where he looked like a rookie. He looked awful. And if he looks like that against the Clippers, then all of a sudden now more of the work has to go on Murray, more of the work has to go on a few other options to score the ball. So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, I'm very interested to see how, again, he looks offensively and how he performs defensively. Because, yeah, Paul George, Lou Will, maybe it's going to be Lou Will, where Lou Will is just going to take him one-on-one and just, you know, expose him.
Welcome.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, it's interesting, because before the Denver-Utah series, I would have said that Denver was just the easiest matchup for the Clippers. Like, I think you and I have talked about this. Both of these teams, to me, are worse than Dallas.
Yeah,
I feared the Mavericks more than either of them. Obviously, that changed a little bit with Kristaps Porzingis unavailable for the second half of the series. But I don't think either of these teams is the Mavericks. And, like, we saw the Clippers pretty comfortably handle the Mavericks. You know, they could have won five of those games, right? It was very close.
I mean, yeah, it could have, if Luka doesn't go, you know, Steph Curry mode, then yeah, the Clippers win five.
Yeah. So I don't expect the Clippers to necessarily have difficulty here. It's just, I do feel better about the Nuggets than I did going into this series, because, you know, number one, Murray just going full supernova, and, like, he is one of four players to ever score 50 points twice in a playoff series. One of them, obviously, is Donovan Mitchell, which is just a crazy thing to think that happened in one series. But, like, the other two names on that list are Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson. Like, that's
pretty
good company.
Pretty good company.
Really, and Allen Iverson is doing this, like, back when the games end in the 80s. You know, like, this is not, like, easy things to achieve. But I also just thought that Denver kind of made adjustments better than I expected them to, because I remember the playoffs last year against San Antonio, against Portland. I thought they were significantly more talented, and they had to eke it out against the Spurs in seven games. And then this Portland team with, you know, without Yusuf Nurkic and just like relying on Rodney Hood to win games in quadruple overtime. Like I was so disappointed in the Nuggets and unable to pull that out. But this one, like, they figured things out. You know, they slowed down Donovan Mitchell. They made Rudy Gobert like unimpactful. They won this like slugfest of a game where they only score 80 points in game seven. And Jokic is like Mr. Game seven now. He's got like double doubles three times. It's like, it's a thing for him. I feel more impressed with the Nuggets than I thought I would be coming into this matchup. And that's not to say that I don't think the Clippers will handle them. Like I think Clippers in five is probably the safe pick here, but if the Nuggets like find themselves early, you know, like if they, this rust versus resting, if they find their momentum early while the Clippers are sort of still getting back into rhythm, I do think that they can pose a little more trouble than like I might have thought 2 weeks ago.
I'm just glad. I mean, well, I wish that they were normal circumstances, but the fact that the Clippers don't have to worry about going to Denver, that's
altitude, right?
That's just one, the altitude too. They have one of the best home court advantages in the NBA, so that's huge. Like, if this was, you know, like that, I think this would be a seven game series, like no doubt. I mean, at least six, but I think it would go seven with that home court, because we've seen those playoff games in Denver. They can be nuts, like Denver, Utah, Portland, Oklahoma City. Like, they got some of the best home court advantage. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because Denver, I don't know what to think of them, because, you know, you talked about them last year in the postseason when they lost. They were, you know, that close to going to the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, this year there were times where they legit looked like they could be a number one seed, a number two seed. And again, there were times in the series against, you know, Utah where people forget Utah blew that massive lead they had in game one.
Right.
And they fell back. So, like, that's another game that the Nuggets could have lost.
It could have been a sweep.
Yeah, I mean, it literally could have been a sweep. So, I don't know really what we can expect. Again, we talked about them potentially being gassed tomorrow. We're going to see how they came out and play. I wouldn't be shocked if the Nuggets come out and they look like an elite team. You know, everyone's clicking on all cylinders. It's just such a mystery. I mean, I guess it would have been the same had it been the Jazz. I just think it's because what we saw in that game seven where, I mean, I put the game on. I missed the first three quarters. I put it on. I saw it was like 70-70. I thought the third quarter had just started. Like 2 minutes left, and I sent like a message to the Slack channel. I was like, what? And I watched those final few minutes, and it just looked awful. Like, both teams looked like no one had any energy. So I think because of that whole game, it kind of changed our mind. Like, if Denver would have come out and they would have won that game by 15, I think we'd be going like, okay, this Denver team could pose a threat to the Clippers big time. But knowing how bad that last game was, I think it's kind of impacted us just a bit, thinking maybe this can be a little bit easier. But again, it all comes down to game one. That game one's going to set the tone. If the Clippers come out, they win by 15-20, which I don't think they'll win by that much. But if the Clippers, you know, establish dominance, it could be a quick 4 or 5 game series. But if the Nuggets come out, if they either win or, again, keep it close, lose at the very end, the Nuggets have confidence, and they're going to rest up, get, you know, a little healthier as the series goes on. And, you know, we could have, again, a 5, 6, 7 gamer, you know, for the series.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm going with Clippers in five. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Clippers in five just for the one reason. It should have been Clippers in five against the Mavericks. I do agree with you. I think the Mavericks are the better team compared to the Nuggets and the Jazz. And I think Paul George, I think Playoff P is going to show up. I think the Clippers, what we saw from the Clippers those last two games, it's kind of tough to remember because it was spread out over the course of like nearly a week. Mm-hmm. Where it was one of the best two-game stretches they've had all season. I mean, they looked fantastic those two games. I mean, they averaged – they scored, what, 155 in one, and they scored like 120-something like in the other. So that's a great Clippers team there. Hopefully getting Patrick Beverley back soon. Everyone's going to be healthy. So assuming everything goes right, yeah, I'm going to give the Clippers in five. I'll be shocked if it goes to 6 or 7.
Right, and I think we've both agree that Kawhi Leonard is our series MVP, but who is our number two for this one?
I'm torn between two. I like Zubac. I think he can have a big series. I think they're going to be expecting him to play a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with either Lou or Trez off the bench. I think the Clippers are going to need just a consistent, huge bench performance. I mean, they got it from Lou kind of. Lou was great that series, but for whatever reason, it just feels like we weren't really talking enough about Lou. Like, wow, what a
great couple stinkers.
Which, but like, not like in previous years, how he's had like, I think it was like game six last year against the Warriors, where it was like, he was the number one focal point talking about how bad he was. So, like, not compared to that, but Lou or Trez, I'm going to go with off the bench. I think someone's going to step up. Maybe it's like a Jamichael Green that comes in and is great. Marcus Morris played the best he's played as a member of the Clippers this series. Mm-hmm. It's forgotten about because he got into little play fights with Luka. But, again, if Morris can come out, we don't need him to score 20, 30. If he can just get 12 to 16 points, and he, like, I don't know how many times if we mentioned this at all. His defense on Luka that series was fantastic. So depending on who he defends this series, I think Marcus Morris, he very well could be a MVP candidate.
Yeah, I'm going to make this pretty boring. I think Paul George is going to be the second best player here, mostly because I think he's going to get the Murray assignment to start. And that's just going to be incredibly important for the Clippers to dictate the tone in game one.
Right.
I also hope that Marcus Morris just does not get into any extracurriculars here because he was fined $35,000 today for the fracas with Luka. If he gets another flagrant two, that's a suspension. And these are just not the kind of things that you want to have to be worrying about going further in the playoffs. So just keep it chill. Denver doesn't seem like a very emotional team, relatively speaking. Right. So that's what I'm looking for.
Something that I just want to quickly note on Morris. I remember like a few weeks ago when he was doing one of his pressers, he said that his, I think, girlfriend, wife is expecting their next kid sometime September. So, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but you know, assuming the Clippers are able to advance to the Western Conference Finals, let's hope that, you know, Morris's next son has maybe a little early birth and he can come out during this series against the Nuggets. So that way he doesn't have to worry about missing what would probably be like a week
Mike
and a half.
Mike Conley only missed two games when he went
that's true.
His child. So I think 2-3 games is probably the standard
right.
You're holding up.
Now. But let's hope the Clippers can get like a 2-0 series lead and then Marcus.
And then his partner goes into labor.
And then he can go. So let's hope. Let's fingers crossed on that one.
That seems like a good note to end on.
Right.
Happy birthday, Marcus, and rooting for a optimal delivery date for new baby Morris.
Yes.
All right. That has been our show. The Clippers take on the Nuggets Thursday, 6:00 Pacific on TNT. I think it's TNT.
Yeah, we get the privilege of listening to Reggie Miller for the first games.
God, what a delight. thanks for listening to our show. Make sure you are subscribed on iTunes or Spotify. And check out all of our coverage of the series on clipsnation.com. And take care.